started. So I don't want to spend much more time. I just want to go over the Bittel. We're not doing any more on it today, but I felt that after, as I said before, for those who walked in the last minute, I was a little overwhelming. So I will bring this chart back, even if you lose it, when it becomes relevant again in the next parak. We have Nir Sashem a while till that. So I just want to, I sort of laid out the chart here. If you take a look at the chart, the first part, the neat table, is laying out how we engage in regular bittul, bittul of regular substances, meaning things that are not anomalous in terms of their shiur, in terms of the amount that's required for bittul. So if we start down the left column, the mixture is first the min bimino lach balach. Now, min bimino means taste equals the same, and lach balach means the mixture blends, right? Lach balach can either be liquids, provide that it's not oil and water, and it can be like a flour, like two kinds of different flour, so even though it's not liquid, it's called lach balach because it blends. So I have one box like that with the Chachamim, and then the next box, min bimino lach balach, same mixture with Rabbi Yehuda, and then below that is min b'she'eino mino, which means taste is different, but lach balach, it blends together, and finally you have min bimino, when it's yavesh b'yavesh, when you have this, it's true dry things, which means discrete. Right, I have three pieces of meat, and that's called yavesh b'yavesh. They don't blend together. You can't tell which is which. That's called yavesh b'yavesh. It's still min bimino. Now, in theory, I didn't put it down here, but if you just make a chart of four possibilities, where each of the two factors are either min bimino or min b'she'eino mino, and then is it lach balach or yavesh b'yavesh, so there's one thing, one of the four, that even though there are four items here, one of them is duplicated. The first and second box are the same scenario. I did leave out one scenario, which is min b'she'eino mino yavesh b'yavesh. Two things of a different taste, which are discrete and don't blend together, you know, like flour or water. Now, why did I leave that out? Well, because how exactly do you have such a thing? Right? If you take, you know, pork and beef and you grind it up, you make that's called lach balach. You can understand how it blends and you can't pull out one substance to the other. But if I have, you know, let's say a fork, a knife, and a spoon, you know, I can't call that a taroves. In order to be a taroves, it has to be a mixture. Right? You know, I feel like it's the, you know, okay, you know, watch carefully, okay? I'm going to mix things up. Okay? Where's my hand? That's essentially what yavesh b'yavesh, min b'she'eino mino. Now, it is possible, by the way, to have such a mixture, but it is highly, highly atypical. The easiest way to have it is if I have three items, one of which is aser b'hanah, but I don't know which one. Mm-hmm. So in other words, yeah, this is an umbrella, this is a watch, this is a recorder. One of them is aser b'hanah, but it got mixed in with the others, and I don't know which it is. That's not a normal case. You frequently encounter the first two kinds of cases of what I'll call min bimino, two things that blend together. You get kitchen shilas of that variety, you will get that. I once in my life got a question of a yavesh b'yavesh, min bimino. I did actually get one such case. It was a fascinating shilas. Somebody was shechting chickens, and a couple of them were treif, and one of them got mixed back into the pile. I went to Rav Shechter when I got the Shaila. I said, Rebbe, you're not going to believe the question that I got. Because it deals with all the topics of Sveik and Yeridea that never come up in a rabbi's practical life. One mixture and then one thing from that mixture falls into another mixture. Lo and behold, it happened. I had a student who used to do Shechita, and he had a friend. But the whole story is like, so I've only gotten that kind of Shaila once. For another time. When we finish Be'er Savo, this Aram Yitz Hashem, and inshallah, we'll do Chulin, we can do Yerideh. But in the meantime, so now, what are the ramifications of these mixtures? So if you start with the first one, the min bimino and lach balach, where it's the same taste, it blends together. So you have the Chachamim's position and Rabbi Yehuda's position. The middle column is what it requires to be batel midoraisa, but then the right column is what it requires to be batel midorabanan. In other words, something might be batel midoraisa, but the rabbanon were more machmir, and they need something more. So if you take, according to the Chachamim, according to Rabbi Yehuda's position, Rabbi Yehuda's position is very easy. Rabbi Yehuda believes that min bimino is not batel, period. Right? Very, very, very simple. So it doesn't matter midoraisa, midrabbanon, there's no bittel whatsoever for min bimino. Rashi paskins that way, but almost nobody, very few Rishonim paskin that way. The Shulchan Aruch paskins that to be batel min haTorah, if it's min bimino, it requires a rov, majority of heter. If it is but mid rabbanon, shishim is required. The permitted substance after 60 times the prohibited substance. Now, when you go to the min b'she'eino mino lach balach, so now they have a different taste, but they blend together. So here, most Rishonim in the Shulchan Aruch Paskin that you need shishim. You actually have to nullify the taste. There is a minority, I don't know, it's some significant Rishonim who disagree and say that no, that if you have less than something like 1/6 or 1/8, even though you can still taste it. In other words, your chaser schmaltz gets mixed into your meat, and you can taste the pork in there, but it's less than what we call kezayis bichtei achilas pras, which is like, I think, 1 in 6, 1 in 8 or something like that. Then min haTorah it's permitted. It's only prohibited b'rabbanim. But the Shulchan Aruch's pasuk is that min haTorah you're not allowed to be able to taste the food. And therefore, obviously, midrabanan, they didn't require anything more than that. But all Rishonim agree. Everybody agrees that midrabanan, shishim, is actually required. And finally, the most interesting case for the conceptualists is when you have two things, that's the fourth line, is mimimino yavish biyavish, where they taste the same, but the mixture doesn't, they don't blend. And you have discrete items there, and min haTorah, all that's required is a majority, and rabbinically speaking, all that's required is a majority. So you have all the fun scenarios. You know, the position of the rush is that I have three pieces of salami. Two I know are kosher, one is treif, but I can't figure out which is which. I can take the three pieces of salami, put them on a club roll, put mustard in between, wash, make hamotzi, and eat and enjoy.
That's right.
Yes, but the problem, of course, is, but you know that the treif one is there. The answer is it doesn't matter. The Rush says that this, in this case, the Rush has a very famous expression, which is that heter nepach lios, iser nepach lios heter. The bittul has transformed the prohibited substance, and it's now permitted. Of course, there is one problem with the Rush, and this is the last thing that I'll say on this, which is, what happens if I have these two pieces of kosher salami, one piece of treif salami? Okay, very nice. The Rush says, enjoy your club sandwich. Now, two more pieces of treif salami fall into the mixture before I had the club sandwich. So now here's the question. After all, I now have, how many pieces of heter do I have, and how many pieces of iser?
Two.
Physically speaking, materially speaking, I have two pieces of heter and three pieces of iser. But if the Rush really meant it, what he said, that when one of iser fell into two of heter, that the iser was transformed into heter, you should say here that it's batel. The Rush says it's not true. Here's where we apply the Gemara's principle from Bechoros, which is chazra v'nei ora. The iser woke up. Matzah min esmino v'nei ora. It found its own species. It's like it rediscovered its identity. It's very difficult to explain that Rush, both sides. It's a lot of fun. It's a short, really fun simon in your day. It's one of the last, the second to last, it's the last simon, the third to last simon in Tarovas, simon Kuftes. It's a lot of fun. It's a short simon. The Rush is not the only position, by the way. The Rashba says, no, you can't eat them at the same time, but one person can eat all of them, but not at the same time. So at least at no particular time do you know you're eating this, and there are two other positions in the Rishon.
Where is the Rush?
It's all quoted in Simon Kuftes. Everything is there.
Okay.
All four positions in the Rishonim. Okay, so that's regular. This is the garden variety bittul that a rabbi theoretically might deal with. Then if you go below that, we mentioned that there are a number of substances that require greater than 60. But here, the crucial point is that the only time you require more than shishim is when you're dealing with min bimino. Now, it's sort of flipped around. Normally, which is more stringent? What's more stringent is two things that taste different, right? Because most Rishonim hold that if there are two things that taste different, if you can taste the Isser, even though you have a majority of Heter, you're not allowed to eat it. So normally, we're more stringent on things that taste different. But here, for whatever reason, the Chachamah made a gzera that certain substances require much larger numbers of bittul. In fact, some of them don't have bittul. I listed not everything, but most of them here. But this only applies by mimbamino. So if you have truma, let's say you have truma that gets mixed into chulin, the truma that belongs to the kohen, the chulin that everybody else can eat, the truma of wheat falls into the chulin of wheat. So if the truma of wheat fell into the chulin barley, as long as you can't taste the wheat, you're fine. That would be shishim if you have 60. But if they're both wheat, so obviously you can't taste it. So even though min haTorah, all that's required is a majority, here, midrabanan, 60 is not enough. You need 100 for truma. You need 200 for arla. You need 200 for kiloya kerem. And yayin nesach and tevel, which we have and will deal with, there is no bittul on. But only when wine falls into wine. If wine falls into beer, if wine falls into water. In fact, we learned that Tshuva Ramosha about, sherry casks. right? Where Ramosha says, the Shulchan Aruch says that wine, Yai Nesach, is batel in water, one in six. It was a machlokas, but that's the position that we technically hold by. But yayin, that wine that falls into wine, no bittul, period. Same thing with untithed produce. If you have oranges which are tevel and they fall into a mixture of oranges that are chulin, the tevel is not batel. And finally, and again, this is not exhaustive, but beria. If you have a bug, the bug is intact, or any creature, any entire living creature that presumably is dead, and it gets mixed in, so you're not allowed to consume that. And that, by the way, applies theoretically even when it's mimbishen amino. Hence, the problem with the copepods in the water for some people. Now, I don't have an issue with the copepods. You know what I'm talking about, the New York City water, right? Yeah. But that's a case of mimbishen amino. Presumably, the copepods, I don't know what they taste like, but they don't taste like the water. I don't know. Whatever.
But this is all lach balach, right? I mean, you're not dealing with the other issues.
Because if it's you see the bug, you just don't eat it. That's easy.
No, but I'm talking about what you're talking about with these substances. We're talking mimbamino, but lach balach.
It doesn't matter. I don't think it makes a difference.
Well, for these particularly, it doesn't make
a difference whether it's lach, but it doesn't matter whether it blends or it's discrete. It makes no difference.
Okay, so there are exceptions to all the rules, basically.
Yeah. Yes. Okay.
In Nazir, we had Mishras another.
According to one opinion of Gemara, that's the source for Tam Ki Iker. There's a machlokas, what we learned from that. But yeah. Let's leave that aside for the moment. Then the thing that we came to in Tosos, which was the oddity, was the issue of Abayin Rava. We're more machmir, we're more stringent when it comes to Truma and Orla and Kalea Kerem and Yayin Esach when it comes to only Min Bebino. By min b'shein amino, you would apply the normal rules of bittul. But the question now is, how do you define min b'mino? So up until this point, we've always defined min b'mino based upon taste. That's the whole idea. The Mishnah will use the term frequently, X falls into Y, it's hareza b'no sein tam. Can you taste it? Can you not taste it? 60, shishim, is just a shorthand for taste. But here, we're not talking about taste anymore, because the prohibition requiring 100 for truma is not about taste. They're the two things. In other words, it's mimimino, the way we normally say it. So here, Abayin Rava took a very funny position. And that's what Tosos mentioned, what we learned 2 weeks ago, which is that mimimino, by these things only, is defined not by taste, but by the shame, by what we call it. So what the specific case that emerged is, we have three substances. We have grapes, we have freshly pressed grape juice, and we have fermented grape juice. Right, so we have anafim, we have yayin chadash, and we have yayin yashan. Now, if we talk about what tastes like what, so the truth is the grape juice tastes more like the grapes. The wine doesn't taste like the grapes or the grapes because it doesn't taste so sweet, it's fermented. On the other hand, what do we call them? Well, one of them we call grapes, and the other one we call wine. We call it yayin. I know, today we would say grape juice and wine. I'm not sure if that would change the status according to Rava. But in the time of the Gemara, they called it yayin chadash, yayin yashan. Like we read it yesterday in the Kriyas HaTorah, the Nazir is prohibited from drinking yayin v'shechar. What is shechar?
Intoxicating
wine. It's not beer, it's intoxicating wine. Yayin, the Targum translates as new wine, yayin chamar chadat, chadash, and shechar is chamar atik. Old wine. So for the Chazal, they're both called wine, they're both called yayin, so they have the same shame, but they have a different taste. The grapes and the new wine have the same taste, but they have a different name. Of course, the grapes and the old wine have both a different name and a different taste. Everybody agrees that's called Mimshei Nomino. But Abayi and Rava argue about, for these purposes only, once you can't actually taste it, once you have more than Shishim, and now we have the stringencies of the 100, the 200, etc., or some things that are not Batel, how do you determine Mimbamino? Is it determined by taste, or is it determined by shame? And we paskin like Rava that it's actually determined by shame. Okay. And I'm going to leave that on your own. You can sort of read the last part, not now, because that was probably maybe the most confusing part of the mixture of three substances. I did sort of spell it out here. You can think about that another time. You know, maybe the next year we have, I don't know when. When's the next?
I think it's the 10th if you're back.
The 10th if I'm back. So we'll resume. If you've looked at this and you want to engage me further on that last topic, fine. If not, we'll let that go. So with that review and introduction and review, now you don't have to remember any of that for today. I promise you, by the time we finish Maseches Avodah Zarah, some of you will be ready to take a smicha b'china on Hilchos Tarovos. Okay? Fine. So now let's go to this. Now let's go to a story on the bottom of Nun Vav Amud Beis. It's the fourth line from the bottom, second to last word. Hahu Uvda. There was a story in Uvda Zamaisa. Hahu Uvda the Hava ben Arda. Okay, and the Arda was Shmuel's town. Rav was in Sura, and Shmuel was in the Arda. Shmuel has a very, very famous statement, which will help you remember that he lived in the Arda. Shmuel was an astronomer. He said, Nihirin li shvilei derakia. It is clear to me the roads of the heavens, kishvilei dinaharda, like the roads, like the alleys of Neharda. Right? Of course, somebody immediately asked him a question, and he couldn't answer it. So you should never get out and make those pronouncements. But that's Shmuel's statement. Nehirinli shvilei derakia kishvilei dinaharda. So Shmuel was in Arda, and a story happened. Didoshu Yisrael va'oved kochavim lehahu chamra. A Jew and a non-Jew threshed grapes. They made wine out of it. Now, the Rishonim here say, and the guy's hands were tied up. The last Gemara that we did was that story of that six-year-old who was paskening shaylus for them, the six-year-old who had mastered Maseches Avodah Zarah, and he said that that nisuch beregel is not called nisuch. If you did it already, so if the guy's hands were tied up where he couldn't touch the wine with his hands, and the only concern is he was touched with his feet, there's no nisuch beregel. That was what that katan had said. But now, the shayla came up in Neharda. Now, Shmuel wasn't really sure. It means probably that his inclination was to prohibit, but he was reluctant to do so. Vishaye Shmuel tlasa rigle. And Shmuel basically held off on answering the shayla. They put the wine aside. And he held off for three regalim. Rashi explains, on the regalim, everybody would come to hear the drasha, but that meant in some ways everybody. Even the Talmidei Chachamim came when the Chacham gave the drasha, and that meant there would be more people in town, and that meant that it would be more likely that somebody had heard a tradition, you know, from their Rebbe, not Shmuel, from somebody else, about the status of this issue. In other words, maybe some Talmud who came to hear the thing, who had learned Brises, he would know something that could serve to have an effect on the Psach here. So my time in the Gemara says, why did Shmuel wait? Ilema mishum de kosavar de imashkach na tana de osar karabinasan osrine afilu bahana. So was it that maybe Shmuel thought, Shmuel wasn't sure what the halacha is. We have a machlokes later, and the Gemara is about to quote it, that if a non-Jew measures the wine, he wants to know how much wine is in the bar. So you know what he does? So today, normally, we, for both personal reasons and hygiene reasons, we would take a ruler or a stick and stick it in the bar. But he didn't have it in one handy, so you know what he did? Well, he took his arm. It's a very useful thing for measuring. You know, I know that my span there is about 9 inches. It's very, very useful to know that when I need to, you know, do a quick measurement. So you know how long your arm is approximately. Maybe it's an amma or something like that. So the guy sticks his hand in the bar. Or, I'm not sure which is less appealing, probably this is, he sticks his leg in the bar. Right? He says, it comes up to, you know, my just below my knee. Right? And that's useful to know. We'll tell you how much wine is in the bar. So there's a machlokes by midado biyad. If he measures it by hand, because his kavana, clearly he had a kavana not so much to touch it or benaseh, he had a kavana for a different purpose, which was to measure it. So the machlokas in that case, whether the wine is motor b'hana. Everybody agrees you can't drink the wine. But the question is it motor b'hana by, at least we'll see in a moment, medado b'yado. So the question was, what was Shmuel waiting for to find out in this case? And again, if you think about what is going on here, the goyim are threshing on the grapes, which become wine, and their feet are in it. Right, so this is really no different than medado beregel. Right, the intention is to step on it, to put your foot in it, but not for the purposes of nisuch. So the question is, what was Shmuel waiting for? Was he concerned that maybe I'll find a tana? Now, what a tana means here, there are two definitions of the word tana. One type of a tana, the way we usually use it in our speech, is a tana was a Mishnaic sage. He was a rabbi of a certain period of time, before the end of the Mishnah, right, and before that. And an amora was after the time of the Mishnah. But there is another meaning to each word. Just for now, the meaning of the word tana. Tana was someone whose job was to memorize brises and recite them. Very often, you find a number of tanaim in the Gemara who were blind, which was probably a testament to their sort of oral memory. And often they weren't necessarily very smart, meaning in terms of they weren't weren't sharp in terms of analysis, but they memorized. They just knew texts. And so Shmuel was hoping maybe he would find a Tana who had a Brisa that followed Rabbi Nasan, and Osrina Afiyad Bana, he would prohibit even Bana. Now, the Tanya, because we have a Brisa that says, Medato ben biyad ben beregel yimacher. If a guy measures the wine, touching it, inserting his arm in, inserting his leg in, the wine should be sold. Meaning you can't drink it, but you can get benefit from it. You can get Hana. Rabbi Nasan Omer biyad also beregel mutar. Rabbi Nasan says it's prohibited if he done it with his hand, meaning you can't even get Hana. If he stuck his leg in, then you can sell it, even though you can't drink it. So the Gemara immediately says, one second, Emer da Amar Rabbi Nasan biyad beregel miyamar. What Rabbi Nasan himself only prohibits when you did it with the arm, not with the leg. So what did Shmuel think he was going to find out? In other words, what did Shmuel think he was going to find out by waiting? What would somebody tell him? Rabbi Nasan and the Chachamim both agree that if you stick your leg in there, you can get Hana, but you can't drink it. So it should be the same thing here. When the guy threshed it, you can do the same thing. Yes,
sir. Explain the idea of how something is usher to drink, but usher to drink, but mutter b'hana. Why do you make this split? I don't understand how that works. What is it?
You like Rabbi Shimon?
No, but should either one or the other? I mean,
you like Rabbi Shimon?
No, tell me why I like Rabbi Shimon.
I can't tell. The reason Rabbi Shimon's sheet appeals to you, there's a line later. We don't paskin like Rabbi Shimon. The Gemara is about to invoke him, but there's a line later in the Gemara expressing exactly your sentence.
You've been mentioning a lot of this all along. Sometimes you say that there's this other category.
One second.
Where it's also to drink, but...
Let me quote you from Daf Samach.
What is it? Is
Daf, one second. Daf Samach Amid Beis. Amar of Adabar Ava, Yanuchu lo le Rabbi Shimon brachos harosho. Blessing should rest upon the head of Rabbi Shimon. Kishumatir matir afilu b'shisiya, uchshu oser oser afilu b'ana. That's the sentiment you're expressing. In other words, you're asking if the concern really is that the guy was menaseh, so then it should be Asr Bahana. If you're not really concerned, why do you prohibit it at all? And there are two answers to this.
It's just practically speaking, it's very confusing for people, for everyone who has to now live according to those fine distinctions.
Okay, so let me respond as to what one of the considerations might have been. We will eventually get to this, probably not today, a very important Tosos on the next, on Daf Nun Zayin Amud Beis. It's a really interesting Tosos. And Tosfos, this was the central issue that Tosfos is dealing with. What is the status of Stam Yenam according to the Gemara? Wine that belongs to a guy that you don't know whether he libated or not, which means he probably didn't. What is the status of that wine? Can you drink it? A guy manufactured wine, it's his wine. Can you drink the wine, Sam? No, absolutely not.
This is Stam Yenam, right.
Can you get Hana from the wine? The answer is absolutely not. Absolutely not. That's the Gemara's line. There's no distinction in the prohibition. We learned it in the second parak in the Mishnayos there, right? Yeno shonachri is asar parna, not just yayin nesach, not mamish enach, even stam yena. Right? Stam yena means stam. We just don't know. It probably he didn't actually libate it. Yayin nesach means you know he actually libated it. The problem, of course, is that in medieval Ashkenaz, this wasn't happening. In medieval Ashkenaz, Jews were engaged in commerce with Gentile wine. Jews took wine from Gentiles as pledges, as securities on their loans. So this made life rather complicated for the Rishonim, because how exactly did you explain that? Now, of course, you could ask the question. One of the logics that is offered to defend this is that our goyim, they're like, They don't really know anything about Avodah Zarah. They're not, the truth is they don't libate this stuff. They're like tinokos, as we're going to learn in the next sugya. So really, it's not an issue. So then, of course, the danger is run. Maybe not a danger, maybe it's a good thing, but some of the Rishonim challenged Rabbeinu Tam and said, well, then people are going to say, I should be able to drink it too. What's the difference? They're not Menaseh. So one of the answers that Tosfos comes up with at the end to explain why is it that you might be able to drink, to get benefit from the wine but not drink it, is because there were two gezeros. There were two reasons why the Chachamim prohibited Stam Yenam. Number one was a concern, a chashash over Yayin Nesach, over actually used in for idolatrous purposes, libated. The second was, as with a number of other foods that the Chachamim prohibited, it had to do with chasnus, with intermarriage. And Tosfos says, if the concern is over Yayin Nesach, over Avodah Zarah, it should be Asr Bahana. But if the concern is only over chasnus, so then it should be like no different than all the other prohibitions. Pas akum. Are you allowed to get Hana from that? The answer is yes, you're just not allowed to eat it. Bishulakam, are you allowed to get hana from it? The answer is yes, you're just not allowed to eat it. Why? Because the concern is about socializing. It's not about the actual kashrus of the substance itself. And these were just staples of people's eating, of people's meals, and therefore by prohibiting these things, you made it very hard to engage in social intercourse with non-Jews. So that's at least a starting point why it makes sense that you sometimes might distinguish between the two. That is, however, not necessarily, maybe it's not a sufficient answer here. It might be. You might argue that by nisuch beregel, it's the guy's wine. So you're right. We're not going to prohibit it ahanah because it's not because nobody's menasech beregel. But it's still the guy's wine, so maybe you're not allowed to drink it, like every gzeir of stam yenam. There is another way, however, of addressing it, which is simply it was part of a broader, even though it may be confusing to people, it's part of sort of a lesa de Yayin Nesach. It's part of a little extension of Yayin Nesach. In other words, it's not Yayin Nesach. It's not quite close enough to be truly, truly concerned, but the Chachamim were very machmeh. They wanted to keep us away from it, so they sort of had, you know, first you have a big barrier, then you have a small barrier, so that's what they may have been. But I think the first one is certainly true in some cases, that there's a reason, there's really a conceptually solidly grounded reason to this. Distinguish between the Isser Shasiya and the Isser Hana, between drinking versus getting Hana, because Hana is only an outgrowth of the concern of Avodah Zarah, but when that doesn't exist, there is a concern, but it's really only one of actually drinking it.
So, I just want to understand what the Gemara is saying here when it comes on and says, Amar da Amar Rabbi Nata Biyab Beregel Mi Amar, and they're saying exactly what?
Well, in other words, the same Rabbi Nassan, even Rabbi Nassan, only prohibited it b'hana when it was nisach b'yad, not nisach b'regel. Right. In other words, Shmuel's story was: some non-Jews who had their hands tied were threshing their own wine with Jews helping them, or either way, I don't know. Is it clear? It's not clear. Probably the Jews' wine. But the guy's hands were tied up, so all that he was doing was touching the wine with his feet. So Shmuel didn't want to pasuk in the Shiloh. The answer we would have thought would have been, it's mutter, go sell it. You can't drink it, maybe go sell it. So what was Shmuel, why did Shmuel wait three regalim to answer the Shiloh? What was he hoping to find out? If he was hoping to find that maybe some Tana had a brisa that paskin like Rabbi Nassan, but even Rabbi Nassan, the Gemara says, only prohibits it bahana when you're dealing with Yad, not with Regel.
So what was the Havamir then? I mean, everyone knew that. So, you know, Rabbi Nassan.
Okay, thank you, Sam. That's what was bothering Tosos, Amor, the Amar Rabbi Nassan. I don't want to deal with it. I'll tell you what my answer would have been. My answer would have been the following. I would have amended the Brisa. I would have taken out the words, Rabbi Nassan Oser. I would put in the words, Yimacha Rabbi Nassan Oser. That's what I would have said. And that's why the Gemara says, Amar da'amar Rabbi Nassan, he only says that maybe by Yad, maybe not by Regel. I would have done something like that. It's the kind of thing where you change the gears in the Gemara. You read correctly. When the Gemara says, Amar da'amar, what was the Havamina? Rabbi Nassan explicitly says that. So the easiest answer would have been, Tosos doesn't say that. Tosos, I'm not going to do it. Tosos Tivaskha Amar deals with this. The easiest kind of answer in these cases is to say that our text was changed later. Right? And the Gemara didn't have the text as we have it, which is why there could have been at least a Havamina. Okay, let's just leave it at that. Okay, but yes, you correctly intuited reading the Gemara that way.
My friend Rabbi Halivni, the Baruch Haim,
yes.
Because that's the kind of...
It's okay. He will enjoy the Tosfos on Daf and Zayin on the days that we'll do probably the next time.
You know what I mean.
I know exactly what you mean. I know exactly. Okay.
People are not happy with it.
The Rishonim did all of these things. It's the kind of answer that Rishonim will give. People have conveniently forgotten that. We will see that based upon an analysis of something later on this Amud, Rabbeinu Tam is going to offer a defense that, you know, would make Poskim so angry, but would make scholars overly joyous in how he cut up the Gemara. And what Rabbeinu Tam said was absolutely correct in terms of the Gemara itself. So anyway, so the Gemara says that can't be what Shmuel was doing. Shmuel couldn't have been hoping, not hoping in the sense he wanted that way, but waiting to find out maybe somebody holds like Rabbi Nassan and we should pasken that way, because even Rabbi Nassan would not prohibit, you could sell the wine either way. Doesn't matter whether you pasken like the Chacham or like Rabbi Nassan, if the guy threshed on it with his feet only, you could sell the wine. And you can't drink it either way. So what was Shmuel waiting to find out? So the Gemara says, no. Ella, you know what Shmuel was waiting for? The imashkachna tana deshari k'rabbi Shimon ishari afil b'shasiyah. Shmuel was hoping to permit the wine even in drinking. And Rabbi Shimon is the one who holds that if it's mutter b'hana, it's mutter to drink. If it's aser to drink, it's aser b'hana. And therefore, and Rabbi Shimon also holds that maga below kavana, if without kavanas nisuch, is mutter, period. Rabbi Shimon holds that if the guy touched it, but he had no intention for Nisuch, then Rabbi Shimon holds you're allowed to drink that wine. So that's what Shmuel was hoping to find out. He was hoping to find out maybe somebody paskens like Rabbi Shimon. Incidentally, by the way, Rav and a number of Amoraim on that Gemara I was just reading to you on Samach Chomim Beis, they pasken like Rabbi Shimon. And after two or three Amoraim all say like Rabbi Shimon, and then the Gemara, the anonymous layer of the Gemara just adds, V'hilchasa, not like Rabbi Shimon. Okay. But many Amoraim did hold like Rabbi Shimon. Rav was sure. Shmuel wasn't sure. He wanted to see. Maybe he could find some evidence we pass on to Rabbi Shimon so that he could be makel. And what you do see, of course, from Shmuel's behavior is that the proper behavior for a posek often, not always, but often is not to jump up and prohibit even though he thinks it's prohibited, but rather, you know, he can't permit it because he thinks it's prohibited, but wait, consult with others, wait and see if something else emerges and so on, so as to not have to make something prohibited, not have to cause, let's say, financial loss to somebody.
It's just using his leg, though?
Yeah, that's how it's understood.
No, Rabbi Shimon?
Rabbi Shimon's loved Africa that way.
Oh, hey then.
Yeah, Rabbi, the point is Rabbi Shimon doesn't make a distinction. Rabbi Shimon says, "Maga shalol kavanas nisuch," touching without the intention to be to libe is mutter, even with the hand. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So now the Gemara tells another story. Hahu of the Hava be Biram. Biram was a place in Bothel. The Hahu oved kochavim, the Hava kasalik bidikla. Some non-Jew climbed up a palm tree. Va'ise luniva. He brought down a palm branch. I don't know, maybe he was a Christian, it was Palm Sunday was coming, so he needed that. Either that or he was a lulav merchant and Sukkot was coming. Either way. So then, Bahade de Kanachis, when he was descending, Naga Beresha de Luliva Bechamra, Shelo Bekavana. On his way down, he kind of fell, and he touched the wine with the tip of the lulav branch. So this has two weaknesses, if you want to call that, in terms of touching. Number one, it lacked intent. And number two, it was maga al yedei davar acher, right? There was an intermediary. He didn't touch the wine directly with his hand or his body. He touched it with the lulav. Now, Tosos, which we're not going to read, Halchi Garsinan, Tosos has a lengthy discussion. He thinks that it's wrong. He thinks that the Girsa is an error in the Gemara. And actually, it's a case where the guy touched it with his hand, Shelo b'kavana. Tosus thinks that if he had touched it, if he had both weaknesses, if it was both not directly, but ayidei davar acher, plus shelo b'kavana, Tosus thinks it would have been mutter. There would be no question. So anyway, but for the moment, we'll be the way Rashi does, and the way version we have in our Gemara. What's that? For Tosus, it would have been mutter even b'shtia. So let's read the Gemara now. So the Gemara says, Shari Rav lizabune laovde kochavim. Rav permitted selling it to a non-Jew, which means he prohibited drinking it, but he permitted it v'hana, getting benefit. Amru le Rav Kahana v'Ravasi le Rav, v'hamar hu da'amar, tinok ben yoma hu osa yayin esach. So Rav Kahana Ravasi, who were Rav's students, and as someone observed to me this morning, a teacher has a responsibility to students, but students also have a responsibility to a teacher. And just as a teacher has an obligation to teach his students the difference between right and wrong, it's also a student's obligation to challenge the teacher if the student thinks the teacher is making a mistake. Respectfully, of course. The way they asked them, they even spoke to Rav in third person. Did the master not say that Tinok Ben Yomo makes Yayin Esach? A Tinok Ben Yomo means literally a child is a day old. So you have this non-Jewish child who maybe he's not a day old, realistically. He's 2 months old, right? And he touches the wine. Or, more realistically, he's 8 months old, so he's crawling around, sticking his hands in everything, and he touches the wine. This Tinok, obviously, has not a clue as to Avodah Zarah, right? He cannot possibly have Kavana to make it Yayin Esach. Absolutely not. So Rav said that the Tinok, nonetheless, makes it Yayin Esach. So they said to Rav, this guy who touched the wine unintentionally should be no different than a tinok who touches the wine intentionally, which is neither of them have intent for being menasech. And yet you said that, here you say it's permissible to sell. By a tinok, you said the tinok makes it yayin esach. So what gives? So Amar Lahu, he said to them, Emor da amre ana bishasiya. A tinok ben yomo can make, who's not Jewish, can make the wine yayin esach, yeah, so that you can't drink it, not that you can't sell it. That machmir, he wasn't. And therefore, he was consistent. Bahanoa miyamri? I never said it's prohibited bahanoa. Okay. So anyway, according to Rashi, what emerges, though, from the conclusion right now, is that touching shaloba kavana, and even al yidei davar achar, even through an intermediary, is not, it will make it prohibited to drink, but not bahanoa. Tosus claims that no, that if it was both without kavana and it was secondary, it was ayidei davaracha, then it would be mutter even to drink. In the Gemara's case, the story of the lulav is not when the lulav touched the wine, when he touched the wine. Why does it talk about the lulav? Because that's what the guy was going to do. That's all. But it's not that the lulav touched the wine, but that the guy himself touched the wine.
And it's also bahanoa because it's considered stam yena.
No, it's mutter bahanoa.
No.
He says, I only prohibit b'shasiyah, not bahanoa.
Yeah, and it's mutter what?
It's mutter bahanoa because there was no intent to be menasech.
So,
you can ask, why is it prohibited? So in this case, it's not the first answer I gave you is not going to work, because it's probably a Jew's wine. The second answer I gave is the one that's relevant. They were still very machmir. They made gedarim on yayin nesach, and therefore they didn't allow it in drinking. One observation about when we read Tosfos next time on Nanzayin Amid Beis, the Rishonim, you can tell, have a visceral reaction against the drinking of non-Jewish wine. Yeah. I don't know why that is. In other words, one of the things that somebody said to Rabbeinu Tam, that's quoted in the Tosfos on Nanzayin Amid Beis, is that between your grandfather's Shita and your brother's Shita and something you said, it turns out you can drink non-Jews wine. Now, Rabbeinu Tam said, God forbid, I never said such a thing. It's a total misunderstanding. A student made an error. Fine. But one might ask the question, okay, so if it in fact works out that in the world in which we live, the non-Jews are of a certain nature, that they're not, they don't know of Avodah Zarah, they don't know of Avodah Zarah in this way, and we hold like Paschalant this Shita, and we Paschalant that Shita, and it turns out that it's permissible to drink the wine, so, hey, cause for celebration, let's have some wine. Right, so nonetheless, you can see there seems to be that the Jewish community did not drink, it would seem, at least in the time of the Bata, did not drink the non-Jewish wine. And it sounds like almost there was something repulsive about it. And I don't know, again, I can't transpose that necessarily back into an earlier period. In a later period, I think by the time of the Ramah, unfortunately, it seems that there were Jews who were mezalzel even in drinking some of the stuff. You can't necessarily apply one period to the other, but at least in the times of the Baalei Tosfos, there was something repulsive about drinking stam yeinam, even though it wasn't it wasn't nisnaseich lavo dezara. So it could be that the Gemara, that sort of feeling exists even in an earlier period as well. But it's one thing when you sell, when you sell the barrel of the wine, okay, it's very abstract, it's very removed from you. But to drink the wine, I don't know, but that's what I might guess.
But then is the discussion in Tosfos, the big Tosfos, which are not just theoretical, but you're saying?
No. Tosus would say that if you touched it al yidei davar acher, it's mutter completely. Shelo b'kavana al yidei davar acher. Tosus would say that, I think, halacha l'maisa.
Okay,
so now we're going to get to somewhat of a difficult, confusing brisa. I had hoped, once upon a time, I thought there was a portable blackboard in here. Maybe I just imagined it. So I'm going to do my best to do this slowly and carefully. The Braisa itself is fairly straightforward. It's how the Amoraim try to parse it. And there were, at the outset, let me mention that there are two disputes between Rav and Shmuel. Each one has Wachumra and Akula. Dispute number one is does a guy who is not old enough to understand what Avodah Zarah is, who touches wine, does it make the wine prohibited in any form or fashion? We just read Rav's statement, that's what's going to trigger this quoting the Braisa. We just read Rav's statement that a tinok ben yomo is ose yayin nesach b'magao. A tinok, even a day old, can make wine into yayin nesach simply by touching it. Shmuel disagrees. Shmuel says if it's a human being who literally is too young to understand anything about it, it has no impact upon the wine. That was issue number one. Issue number two, if you have a goy, an eved, let's say, I'm going to say carefully the way the Gemara says, you have an eved shel goy, who a Jew bought and now converts him, and the goy has mila and tefillah, this eved, so now he's an eved kanani who's 98% Jewish, and eved kanani, ordinarily speaking, is not a problem with wine. The only catch is that this eved kanani yesterday was not Jewish, and he didn't necessarily convert really of his own free will. He was sold to a Jew. So the question is, even though technically he's Jewish now, are we concerned that he still does his old things? Right? He touches wine, he's still be menasechet. So Shmuel says that if someone buys an eved from an oved kochavim, even though you do the mila, if the eved refuses to do mila or tefila, the Jew can keep him for 12 months to try to persuade him. After that, he's got to turn around and sell him to a guy. Right? If an eved kanani refuses, if someone you buy as an eved, as a non-Jew, refuses to accept mitzvos, you know, as an eved kanani, then you can't keep him. You have to sell him. You can sell him to a guy or whatever else you do with him, but you're not allowed to retain ownership because the retain avadim is a matter of principle. I don't know if maybe the chachamim require that basically you have to they have to convert. They have to be basically Jewish. So Shmuel claims though that if you buy an eved from a non-Jew, even though you did mila and tefila, he still makes the wine that he touches Yayin Nesach ad shiyishtakeh shem avodas kochavim menu, until he no longer, you know, talks. He no longer, you know, his avodah zarah is no longer on, you know, his mouth. You know, so he says damn instead of saying Jesus, right, or something like that. So because up until that point, we're afraid he's still, you know, he still does his old ways. So Rav says not an issue. Shmuel says it's an issue. The Gemara will say, quote Rabbi Shuben Levi says the period is 12 months. Up for a year after you buy the Eved, you assume that he continues to have an attachment to Avodah Zarah. Rav says, we're not concerned. Once he does Milan Tvila, we can be lenient. So you have Rav and Shmuel on the case of a Tinok Ben Yomo, whether he makes Yayin Nesach, and an Eved who's been converted within the first 12 months, an Eved you purchase from a non-Jew, whether he makes Yayin Nesach. Rav is stringent by the Tinok and lenient by the Eved. Shmuel is lenient by the Tinok and stringent by the Eved.
When you say Shmuel is lenient by the Tinok,
does that mean that it's
nothing? It's
mutter. No. If a tinok shel ol kochavim came over to your house and he stuck his hand in the wine, you could drink it. That's what Shmuel would say.
It's amazing that an eved. I mean, talk about their sensitivity. That the eved kanani can write a sefer Torah, but you can't. But your chashash. You have a chashash about the wine that he touched.
Well, only a specific kind of Eved Kanani. Right. In other words, normally, once that Eved Kanani has been Jewish for 12 months, and any person who's born as Eved Kanani, which probably been most of them, yeah, so they're 98% Jewish. There's no concern about Yayin Nesach. It's a very specific case. And Tosfos on Zion Amid Beis, we'll see.
No chashash about other areas, though, just about Yayin Nesach.
Just about, because he hasn't.
But we count it for a minion, or whatever else we do.
Well, we don't count that Eved towards a minion.
But I'm saying, but anything else that we can, that an Eved Kanani. We're not questioning his Jewish status, except
it's not his Jewish. Right, that's the concern. Is not the Jewish status. Right. No. I don't even remember. Right. No, I don't think we're. I don't think the concern is over the Jewish status, because a Jew who worships Avodah Zarah, you have the same concern.
Yes, yeah.
Okay. So now we begin the discussion of this issue. Gufa. The Gemara now is quoting an Amoraic statement that was quoted Derech Agav, incidentally, in the previous sugya. Omar Rav Tinok Ben Yoma Osa Yayin Nesach. And now the Gemara wants to analyze this. Eisvei Rav Shimi Barachia L'Rav. Rav Shimi Barachia asked Rav the following from the following brisa. Halokeach Avad Min Ovdei Kochavim Shemalu V'lo Tavlu. If you buy an Eved from a non-Jew, and the Eved has not yet been circumcised or gone to the mikveh, Shemalu v'lo tavlu. He's been served, but hasn't gone to the mikveh, so he's not Jewish. Now, he's not Jewish yet. A guy who does mila and doesn't do tefila is 100% a guy. 100%. So an Eved Kanani is the same status. He's still not an Eved Kanani. He's still an Eved Shel Guy. So now, the Braisa says, Rukon u'midrasan bashuk tamei. Did I skip? Oh, I'm sorry. That's important. Let's say you bought a non-Jewish maidservant, and before she converts fully, before she has tvila, the Gemara doesn't say that, but that's understood, she gives birth. Now, if the shifcha had already done tvila, and she were full-fledged shifcha kananis, so the children that are born to her don't require, I mean, they require mila because you're obligated to do a mila for your eved, just like you're obligated to do a mila for your child. But if you don't do a mila on your eved kanani, it's no different than not doing a mila on your child, which is the child is 100% Jewish, the eved kanani is 100% eved kanani Jewish, it's just that you're violating not doing a bris mila. That's if the mother had tefillah. But this is a case where b'nei hashvachos, the mother didn't yet have tefillah when she gave birth. So what do the children require? So the children require a conversion for avdus also, which means mila and tefillah. In other words, now the bris mila is not just the mitzvah mila, it's actually part of the conversion, and they require tefillah. So you have a case where you did the mila on these children, but you didn't immerse them in the mikveh. And since their mother wasn't the Shifcha Kananis when they were born, they are not Abadim Kananim until they finish the conversion. So the question is, what is their status at this point in terms of various things? So the Braisa says that Rokon Umidrasan Bashuk is Tame. So, and the Amrila Tahar, and this is the tricky part. There are two traditions about this. Now, if you have a man who is a Zav, whatever Zav is exactly, it's usually translated as gonorrhea, but no idea what it exactly is. Or you have a woman who is a Nida, who is a Zava, or a Yoledes. So all of these people, they have a certain level of Tumah associated with them. So one of the things that they have Tumah associated with them is that their Ma'ayonos, certain of their bodily fluids, not all, certain have the status of the person themselves in terms of being an avatoma. Normally, let's say I have a sheretz. A sheretz is an avatoma, a dead lizard, a dead gecko. Somebody killed the guy on the Geico commercial. Okay, so well, you have a dead gecko here, and you touch it. So the gecko is an avatoma, and you're a rishon l'toma. That's it. Okay. If let's say I touch a mace is an avievos atoma, I become an avatoma. If someone touches me, they become a rishon l'toma. Let's say I spit, okay, my roke. My roke is not me, and it's probably going to be like a rishon l'toma once it comes out of me. That's the general things kind of descend. But there's an exception. By the case of Zav and Zava and Nida and Yoledes, certain mayanos have the same status of the person. So if a zav spits, the zav's saliva, as long as certainly if it's still moist, the zav's saliva is an av hatumah. Mm-hmm. Someone who touches it becomes a rishon l'tumah. Because of this, the chachamim were excessively gozer on rokin hanimtsayim bashuk. If you found saliva in the shuk, maybe it was from a zav. And the chachamim had all sorts of gzeris. They had gzeris against am ha'aret, ame ha'aret, because they weren't careful about tumah v'tara. And they also, as a separate gzera, having nothing to do with tumah v'tara, but as creating another wall between Jews and non-Jews, they would go there that ovde avodah zara are like zavim. Now, min ha'Torah, a non-Jew is not mitame in any way whatsoever when he or she is alive. The only tumah that's associated with a non-Jew is when they die. That their contact with their body, touching and carrying for sure is metame, and some Rishonim say even an ohel, just like a Jew, even an ohel. But certainly there's no tumah min ha'Torah associated with a guy, except for after the guy has died. A guy cannot be a zav, a zava, a nida, yoledes for the purposes of tumah. But nonetheless, the chachamim would go there to make goyim like zavim. The Gemara in Shabbos explains why. It has nothing to do with tumah v'tara, it had to do with certain kinds of social barriers. So now we have this eved, who's a guy, technically. The question is, what's the status of his roke? What's the status of his midras? What midras means is as follows. Normally, I sit on, if I'm a mace, I touched it, I certainly have gone to funerals, I've come in contact with a mace, I am an afatoma. When I sit on this chair, I make this chair a rishon l'tumah. If there were another chair underneath it, chairs all the way down, since a chair cannot be lower than a rishon l'tumah, only the chair I'm sitting on becomes tameh. But a zav and a nida and a yoledes have a very unique din. If you have like the princess and the pea, you have a bunch of mattresses, and the zav is lying on the top one. Every mattress underneath the zav is tameh and is an av hatumah. The psukim in the Torah deal with this. Kol ha-mishkav asher yishkav halav azav yitma. Right, and the Torah is a special gzeres hakasa by mishka, by moshe, by beds, by seating, and so on. All sorts of dinim, where not only does it not descend the level of tumah, but everything underneath the zav. That tumah is known as tumas midras. Tumas midras means when your bodily weight is supported by something, if you are a certain kind of tumah, you convey tumah to that in a unique way. So the Gemara wants to know, and Azov is one of those people. Okay. Question?
Yeah.
Go ahead.
So how can we have not been really concerned with like the tumah of the yain that going and having touching?
Tumah?
Yeah.
Because you can drink wine that's tummy. If I touch wine, it's tummy. What's that? Kohanim can drink wine that's tummy.
Okay.
There are any Kohanim here? No Kohanim at the moment. Okay. Kohen can't touch our dead gecko friend? Of course he can. He just can't touch a mace.
So what's the mouth mean? You can't bring it, like, you can't bring mouth fish it?
Nafkamina, which we bought.
I mean, whether something's
having a tumah.
Whether food is tumah or tara.
Oh, no, in a day where people were concerned about tumah v'tara. Oh, yeah. Right, it's irrelevant to us. But
the in the Gemara as well.
In the time of the Mishnah, in Eretz Yisrael, and even afterwards for a time, tumah v'tara mattered. Absolutely mattered. No, for us, it's irrelevant. This aspect, the roka and the midrash is totally irrelevant to us. Right. That's why I explained, because most people haven't encountered these halachas. You have to learn Seder Taurus for it. No, there's no practical meaning for us.
How's the mission? If a Nazir touched wine, then it becomes Tameh, yeah?
Yeah, so it means you couldn't drink that wine when you were eating Truma, if you were a Kohen.
Okay, the Gemara deals with that.
Yeah, yeah, okay. There are prakim of Mishnayos and Seder Taurus that deal with all of these laws. So it's no, you're right, there's no practical difference for us in stuff being Tameh, but just to understand what, in terms of conceptually, the Gemara is in effect trying to categorize this Eved, these Avadim, who had Mila but no Tvila, what are they? Right? You know, are they really, halachically speaking, they should be kegoyim gemurim l'chol devrehem. They're really technically not Jewish. Except that, when it comes to rabbinic laws, now I don't think anybody would question, if this, let's say according to the Rambam paskins like Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, that a mace of a goy is metame if you touch or carry him, but not be'ohel. Mm-hmm. Okay? No tumas o'ol by a goy. So, what would the status here be by this Tino, B'nei Ashvachos and Halokeach Eved Min HaGoy? What would the status be if such an Eved died? The answer is, no Tumas Oel, according to the Rambam. Okay, if once they became, once they had Tevila, then they're like a Jew, and of course they're Metamei Be'ohel. So again, it's really about the status of the Goy. So the question of whether these Avadim are treated as Zavim is really, it's not the issue for us, is not so much the practical Metamatara, but what does that say about their status? Who are they? So again, these two categories, Avadim that you buy from a Goy, or B'nei HaShvachos, Shemalu V'lo Tavlu, either one.
Are those, you say either, are they the same?
Well, why, you tell me why they're different. They're both halachically not Jewish. One, you what's the difference between the two? One was purchased as an adult from a non-Jew. The other one are born in that house, right? They're B'nai HaShvachos, which means they didn't grow up anymore in an Avodah Zarah environment. Presumably, one would be more as lenient or more lenient by B'nai HaShvachos than you would by Alokeach Eved Min HaGoy. Yes. But the Mishnah is equating, the Bryce is equating the two. So now those who say, Amri, so Rokon u'midrasan bashuk tameh, v'amri le tahar, and some say it's tahar. Yenam gedolim osim yayin nesach, kitanim ein osim yayin nesach. So gedolim make wine that they touch yayin nesach. And again, who are they? They are people who are technically goyim, but already on their way to becoming Jewish, and maybe are not as likely to worship Avodah Zarah. The B'nai HaShvachos, even less likely to worship Avodah Zarah, but even the Eved who's bought from a guy, he might just say, look, I haven't finished the process yet, but basically I'm a Jew now, so that's just the way it is. And he's less likely than a regular guy to make Yayin Nesach. So the Braisa says that Gedolim make Yayin Nesach, Ketanim don't make Yayin Nesach, Ve'elu hein Gedolim ve'elu Ketanim, what's the definition? Gedolim yodem mitiv avodas kochavu mishamshah, Ketanim enam yodem mitiv avodas kochavu mishamshah. Gedolim means, it's not an age thing, it means, do they understand what religion is, what Avodah Zarah is, and so on. If they don't, that's called Ketanim. If they do, that's called Gedolim. If it's not the age, it's not a specific age. Okay. Now, so let's just review the Braisa, and then it's obvious what the Gemara's question is. The Braisa is telling us when you have these two liminal types of goyim, you have an Eved who was bought as an adult from a non-Jew who hasn't yet finished the conversion process, or you have children born to a non-Jewish maidservant who herself didn't have tefillah yet, so they are technically not Jewish, but they were born in a Jew's house, and the intent is going to be to eventually put them in the mikveh. They had milah already. So they're both technically non-Jewish, but well on their way to becoming an Eved Kenani. What is their status? So with respect to the Tumas Zav of a Goy, which is only rabbinic in nature, there's two opinions. One opinion says Tameh, one opinion says Tahar. But the Pshat and the Bryce says it applies across the board to both of these two individuals. The Eved that you bought from a Goy and the B'nai Shvachos. And then there's also a concern of Yayin Nesach, and there the halacha is that both of these individuals, if they are gedolim, meaning if the B'nai Shvachos grow up and they haven't gone to the mikveh yet, if they are gedolim, then they make Yayin Nesach. They are ketanim, they don't make Yayin Nesach. Right? So bottom law, and that presumably also applies to both. Right? And as if you buy an Eved from a Goy, meaning he was owned, this person began his life owned by a non-Jew, he could be little, he could be big. Or if you buy a non a shifcha and she hasn't converted yet, and then the children are born, which means when they come into the world, they are owned by a Jew. Either way, the Braisa says the din is the same. It sounds like for Tumah, we're not sure what the din is, but it's the same for both. And the din is the same by Yai Nesach, which is that Gedolim make Yai Nesach, Ketanim don't. So what do you see from this? You see that a guy who is a Katan doesn't make Yai Nesach. So that's what the Gemara says. Katani Mias, at least, what we can point to in this Braisa, is Gedolim in Ketanim lo. That's the question against Rav. Yes, Gabe.
Except that would only more make in this case because they already done Tefillah.
So you would have thought, so we might be making by other things, but apparently, oh, I see.
Yeah.
So hold on. So which of these two is that more really more viable claim by?
Really by the
Bnei Shvachos, which Rav gives the answer. You just gave Rav's answer. Tirgama ab Bnei Shvachos. In other words, Rav is going to say the following. Rav was not willing to argue that you would distinguish between... Rav would say the following. If I buy an Eved from a Goy, it doesn't really matter whether he's had Mila yet or not. It's irrelevant. Right? He still is a Goy, and if one of them... If after having Mila, he wouldn't make it Yai Nesach because he's too little, then it wouldn't make a difference even if you hadn't bought him from a Goy. It still wouldn't make a difference. There really is no... He was born to a non-Jew. He is a non-Jew. Nothing changes. So if Ketanim don't make Yai Nesach by Eved She Lokach Mena Akum, then even if you didn't buy from the Akum, it's still going to be the same thing. Ketanim won't make Yai Nesach. But Bnei Shvachos is a much better argument. A Ben Shifcha is fundamentally different than the Eved She Lokach Mena Goy because he was born into a Jewish context. It probably doesn't even matter the fact that he did the Mila. It's the fact that he's born in a Jewish context. So the Gemara says, Tirgama a Bnei Shvachos. No. You know when the Braisa draws a distinction between Gedolim and Ketanim for Yai Nesach? Only by Bnei Shvachos, not by the first case. And if you don't draw that distinction by the first case, if you say that an Eved who you bought from a Goy makes Yai Nesach no matter what the age, then the same thing for a Goy, and that would allow Rav's position to stand. But then the Gemara immediately asks the question, HaVechein Ka'amar. The Braisa seems to equate the two. Vechein. They have the same din, right? Vechein Bnei Shvachos. So how can you say that there's a difference by the Yai Nesach? Then why? Then they're not the same anymore. So the Gemara says, Arukan Umidrasan. No, when did the Braisa equate them? The Braisa only equated them by the Tumah issue. By the Tumah issue that they both are Mitame. But when it came to Yai Nesach, the distinction between Gadol and Katan that the Braisa listed was only referring to the second case, the Bnei Ashvachos. Now, the Gemara continues, and this is probably one of the hardest things to grasp. If you're interested, the Rashis are all on the next Amud. The Gemara says the following. If you want to say that the Vechein is limited to part of the Braisa, in other words, the Braisa talks about two laws, Tumah and Yayin Esach. And if you want to say that the equating of Eved Shalakach Min Hagoy and Bnei HaShvachos is only on one of those two, so that's what Rav wanted to say. The Gemara wants to say it's only on Tumah, not on Yai Nesach. By Yai Nesach, they're not the same. By Yai Nesach, the Eved Shalakach Min Hagoy makes Yai Nesach Gadol or Katan. By Bnei Ashvachos, that's where the distinction holds. The Gemara says only that only works Hanicha Lamanda Amar Tame. El Lamanda Amar Tohor Mai Ika Lameimar. If you're going to say, like the second Lashon in the Braisa, that when it comes to Tumah Vitara, there is no distinction whatsoever between a Gadol. There's no distinction between the Eved and the Bnei Ashvachos, that they're both Tahor. So then the Gemara says it makes absolutely no sense. Why? So Rashi explains. That if you're going to say that they are Tahor, then the Braisa should not actually have blended the two. You know what the Braisa should have said? It should have said that Eved Shalokach Min Hagoy Ruko Umidraso Bashuk is Tahor. Bnei HaShvachos Mago B'Yai Nesach Gedolim Osed Yai Nesach Ketanim Enosayin Yai Nesach. Why? Because if you say that the Goy Shalokach Min HaEved is Tahor, then it's a kavachomer that Bnei Ashvachos are tahor. There's no need to tell you that there. And there's no point in mentioning Yayin Esach by the Evet Shalakach Men Agoy, because the Evet Shalakach Men Agoy is the same thing as a regular guy. So the Braisa should have been split into two halves, says Rashi. One of them talking about the Evet Shalakach Men Agoy, that his Roko Umidraso is Tahor, and you don't need to even talk about B'nai HaShvachos, it's obvious. And then by B'nai HaShvachos, you would then say that you draw a distinction between the two kinds of wine, which doesn't apply by a Evet that you bought from a Goy. See, if you said that Evet Shalakach Men Agoy is Tamei, Midraso and Roko are Tamei, so then I understand why you have to tell us. You have to tell us that then also applies by Ben Shifcha, right? Because we know that a Ben Shifcha we're already more lenient on by wine, right? By a Ben Shifcha, we distinguish between Gadol and Katan and touching the wine. So what if you told me that a Evet Shalakach Men Agoy makes things Tameh, he's like a Zav, I wouldn't know that necessarily holds by B'nai HaShvachos unless you tell me. Hence, the Braisa says, V'chein B'nai HaShvachos, this is the din by Tuma, that they are Tameh. And by the way, by a B'nai HaShvachos, this happens to be a distinction between his wine. But if you say that the Gemara says that they're Tahor, that the Tuma, if you take the second Lashon of the Braisa, Amri La Tahor, there's no reason why the Braisa should have connected these two. It should have been two separate statements. That's the way Rashi understands the Gemara. Tosfos has a different approach, but I don't want to really, it will just confuse things. At this point, I think it's worth accepting the Gemara's presentation that Rav is going to have a problem and we're going to have to come up with a solution. Yeah.
Okay. So if according to the Lashon, it's Tahor, so then that means that we're not treating them as non-Jews anymore, correct? We're treating them as Jewish Eknanim.
Yes, so with regard to Tumah. Not with regard to Yayin Esach, Rav would say. Everybody would say, Gedola make Yayin Esach. Everybody agrees to that. In other words, so they're treated not like a guy with respect to Tumah. With respect to Yayin, they're partially like a guy, at least, maybe totally.
Right. Only because of the history.
Only
because of the history.
Correct. Because they're technically not. I mean, yeah, probably yes, something like that.
To qualify that answer, the question is not their status, because this is all the Rabbanans were in.
Correct. Right. So how did the Rabbanan choose to treat them in these in different cases?
Right. But
their status with the Rice is Goy.
Right.
That's clear. So I say status for certain Dean of the Rabbanan.
Right.
So I have a problem for Rob because he says Ben Yomo is making a Yanesa.
That's the problem. So Rob was trying to get around it by claiming the distinction only applies within B'nai HaShvachos, not by Evet Shalakach Men Agoy. But then the question is, how does the Brice equate it to V'chein? The answer was, V'chein on the Tumah. But then the Gemara says that only works if you say Tameh. If you say Tahor, what can the V'chein be referring to other than the Yayin Esach, that Gedolim Osin Yayin Esach Tanim, Enos Yayin Esach. So that's where the Gemara stands right now. So the Gemara says, Hakamash Malan Avadim Dumya de B'nai HaShvachos. Ma b'nei shvachos malu v'lo tavlu hu da'osen yayin esach malu v'tavlu lo af avadim kein. So the Gemara says the Gemara's final answer. Let me ask you a question. According to Rav, do b'nei hashvachos and evet shalakach men agoy have anything in common by yayin esach? The answer is yes, they do. They have in common that a gadol makes Yayin Esach. Okay? That they do have in common. The din is not identical by wine, but they both have something in common, that they're like a guy, that they make wine Yayin Esach for their gedolim. So Rav says that was actually the Gemara's, that's the Brice's V'chein. Now, but then the question is, it's very strange, what's the point in juxtaposing them when even though they have a commonality, they're different in the halacha. You should have split up in two ways. So Rav says that the purpose of the Gemara was to make the following inference: that avodim are dunya de b'nei shvachos. Ma b'nei shvachos is only malu v'lo tavlu da osin yayin esach, malu v'tavlu lo. Just as b'nei shvachos only make yayin esach when they become gedolim, if they didn't have tevila yet. Now, how do you know that's true? How do you know that if they had tefillah, they wouldn't make Yayin Esach if they're gedolim? The answer is, why would they? They're Jewish. They were raised in a Jewish home. Why would you even think? Why would you even think that B'nai HaShvachos, who did tefillah, or gedolim, would make Yayin Esach? Of course they don't. So to teach you that the same thing is true, that af avadim came, so too by avadim, it's only if malu v'lo tavlu that they make Yayin Esach, but if it's malu v'tavlu, then even gedolim of Eved Shalakach Min Hagoy, do not make Yayin Nesach. And why does the Gebrais have to tell you that? Le'afuke mid Rav Nachman Amar Shmuel, the Amar of Nachman Amar Shmuel, Halokeach Avodim, Min Ovde Kochavim, Aval Pishem Molu Vitavlu, Osen Yayin Nesach, Ache Tishaka Avodas Kochavim Mipihem. Kamashmalon Dilo. In other words, the whole point of juxtaposing, according to Rav, the way the Gemara says, the whole point of juxtaposing B'nei Shvachos to Avadim is that you realize that just as B'nei Shvachos, clearly, if they had Tevilah, they're fully Jewish and have no taint of Yayin Nesach at all. The same thing is true by Eved Shalakach Min Hagoy. Why would I have thought otherwise by Eved Shalakach Min Hagoy? If he did Mila and he did Tevilah and he's Jewish now, he's an Eved Kanani, why would I thought that he makes Yayin Nesach? Because Rav Nachman Amar Shmuel says he does make Yayin Nesach as long as Lo Nishtakeh Hashem Avodas Kochavim Heimenu. So Kamashmul on the Braisa, by inference, by equating B'nei Ashvachos and Eved Shalakach Min Hagoy, is to equate that Malu V'lo Tavlu versus Malu V'tavlu. It's to tell you that they line up, and that just as by a Ben Shifcha who does the Tefillah, 100% Jewish, no taint of Yayin Nesach, same thing is true by an Eved Shalakach Min Hagoy. If it feels like scratching your head a little bit like this, it is, but that's what the Gemara says.
What does that literally mean? That they don't use certain terms to refer to their God? What does that mean?
The literal meaning of the statement is they don't stop referring to their God. The Gemara, which we'll read next time, and I think God willing in 2 weeks, hopefully, will deal with how do you know, and they give a time. They give the 12-month time, and we'll talk about it then. Yeah.
Isn't that only in the Amilat Tower? And according to if you say that in the first case by Tumas, that's Tameh, so you don't have to come and sit on.
Correct. Excellent point. And Tosus will make that Tosus that I keep talking about, we haven't referred to, that is a crucial point in discussing Psak Halacha, that you only have to come on to this answer of, you only have to, according to Rav, you only have to reject Shmuel's din according to the Girsa of Tahar. If the Girsa was Tameh, then we can leave the first Teretz Vechein, and Rav could possibly hold like Shmuel. That's important because depending on how you paskin on the Tameh Tahar question, may or may not force your hand, depending on what you hold on the other two issues. Tosus will talk about that in Zion Base. Excellent. Okay. Very good.